Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Welcome to episode 194 of the Sisters in Loss podcast. Have you heard of the term cervical insufficiency? Cervical insufficiency is a painless opening of the cervix that results in delivery of the baby during the second trimester of pregnancy. Connective tissue disorders that are present at birth and injuries can make tissues of the cervix weak. When the cervix is weak, the baby may have to be delivered too early. Today's guest experienced a stillbirth at 19 weeks due to cervical insufficiency and a birth defect. Darina Alfred's first pregnancy ended in an early miscarriage, and since miscarriage is so common, she did not anticipate any difficulties moving forward with her journey to motherhood. Her second pregnancy was a stillbirth at 19 weeks, and in working with maternal fetal health specialists, getting an autopsy, they learned that their son Joshua had a birth defect and she had cervical insufficiency. Darina went on to have two subsequent pregnancies where she was placed on bed rest for the majority of the pregnancy, and during her third pregnancy was on the bed rest in the hospital for 14 weeks. In this episode, Darina shares how her rainbow baby pregnancies inspired her to write a book dedicated to that experience, how she, even as a psychologist, did not understand birth trauma of what she had experienced, and how her new practice as a therapist really focused on perinatal mental health. This episode is for you to listen to if you've ever experienced a stillbirth, birth trauma, or cervical insufficiency. This episode is for you to listen to if you are a therapist and experienced a miscarriage or infant loss. Here is Darina Alfred.
Well, thank you, Darina, for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I would love for you to share a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yes. Well, my name is Darina Alfred. I am a psychologist and a perinatal mental health specialist. And I also am a mother and a wife and a Christian.
So take us back on your journey to motherhood and share with us your law story and journey.
So it actually goes back quite some ways. I would say more than 20 years ago. I had an early miscarriage. And at that point, obviously, I was younger, really didn't know what and why things had happened, but it was so early. And the information that I had gotten from medical providers was that, you know, it just happened. So no explanation, but it just happens. And it happens to a number of women, and it shouldn't have any bearings on you in the future. So I pretty much took that at face value. Still grieved that loss, but again, kind of just took the advice that it was maybe just something that had happened. So fast forward, in 2004, I got married and spent my first anniversary apart from my spouse because he was mobilized to Georgia. He was actually in grad school, but he was in the Army Reserve and got mobilized to Georgia. I stayed in Missouri until I could get down there to him, but anyway, in our second year of marriage, we had both relocated to Georgia. He was still stationed there. We found out that we were pregnant and we're really excited. You know, 2 years into marriage, first baby, really excited. Family was really excited. And again, really did not think anything about that there might be any complications, even though I'd had a previous loss. So just really kind of went on with the pregnancy, made it through the first trimester, which is the time where, you know, most people start to, quote unquote, feel safe. And then we get to the 19th week. And I actually work at Auburn University in Alabama, and I commuted to Georgia where we lived, not too far, but across time zones. So that was always interesting. But one morning, and it happened to be the morning that my husband was promoted to major, that went to his promotion ceremony that morning, had to go over to Auburn for a social gathering for work. And then on my way, or actually while I was at this gathering, I started to just feel uncomfortable. Didn't kind of know, just thought maybe I'm tired. By that time, I could feel baby move and baby was moving, that sort of thing. But I just didn't feel right. So anyway, I drove home from the event back to Georgia. And the whole time, I had this feeling just of pressure and just feeling uncomfortable. And so, you know, I drove home, went home, decided to rest, got through the evening. And then that evening, still kind of having this off feeling, wasn't sure what it was. And then that evening, as we were in bed, I just kept walking, kind of pacing. I'd get uncomfortable, so I'd get up and walk, and I'd pace. Had no idea that I was in labor until my water broke that evening. And I was rushed to the hospital. So the ambulance came, took me to the nearest hospital, and was told, of course, that I was going into labor. And it was such a sobering moment. I knew the moment that my water broke that there was going to be an issue, like things were not going to go well. But because I'd had a miscarriage before, I had a DNC at the time, and I thought, oh, that's just what they're going to do. And so then when they told me that I actually had to deliver our son, Joshua, I was near hysterics because I had not expected to have to to labor and deliver, essentially. And so that was really distressing to me because I knew my baby would be stillborn. And that was very heartbreaking to me. It wasn't like a DNC where, you know, you kind of go under, you come back up, and it's happened. So that was really, really difficult. But my husband was a trooper. He was there. He was coaching me during the labor. And, you know, I think we both just remember the silence when he came out and he was born, and there was silence. Like we never, like that is not an experience as a parent that you think you have. The first thing that I think most parents look for is hearing the baby cry. And so knowing that there would not be a cry and that there would be silence was just really very difficult. One of the saddest moments I'd ever recall. We then, shortly after that, there were questions about, you know, so what do you want to do with his remains and how do you want to move forward? And you know, it was like, excuse me, wait a minute. Like, we just had a baby here and our baby did not survive. I'm sure these are next steps and protocols, but it was really just daunting for us. To try to figure all of this out, and really didn't know anything about, you know, what should you do, you know, when your baby dies. We were still just emotionally a wreck, to be honest. So that whole part was difficult. You know, we did what we could in terms of making the arrangements. We didn't initially have a memorial. I mean, we were just emotionally raw. We did the best that we could. We did get some memory keepsake that they provided us and a picture of him. And so those things were really, really important. And we didn't realize how important until later. but it was very, very helpful that we had those things. And then, you know, kind of muddled our way through. It was really difficult, like with our marriage and connecting, and lots of our friends were pregnant during the time as well. And so it was, again, just trying to maneuver through. I think, you know, our family surrounded us and did the best they could to encourage us and support us. But of course, there were the comments, you know, it'll be okay. And, you know, you'll all be able to have another baby and things that, of course, people mean well by, but they can be really painful. So, you know, we muddied our way through, when I say muddied because it felt that way, you know, through the next weeks and months. And about the following year, that was 2006, the following year, 2007, we found out we were pregnant again. So at this point, I'd had an early miscarriage, I'd had a stillbirth, and then we were pregnant again. And with this circumstance, not only were we pregnant, but we would actually be moving from Georgia back to Missouri. That was a little bit of an interesting part of the journey as well. So with this pregnancy, we knew we would have to have a maternal fetal medicine specialist. So early on, we were connected with them. They helped us to understand like what we would need to do. But when they learned that we were moving to Missouri, they were like, well, we can help you up to this point, but you're going to have to find, you know, care. So we made it through the first few months. I think it was I was still in my first trimester going into the second when we moved, but I was immediately put on bed rest. So that means I was working as a psychologist at Auburn University. We knew I would be giving up my position heading back to Missouri. I did not have a job at that point. So that kind of worked out. But it, of course, affected, you know, our income, all of that. But we were committed to doing whatever we needed to do to make sure baby got here and was safe. We actually ended up moving to Missouri. I remember my mom driving me because Greg was driving the truck. So I was in the back seat of her car and she was driving me up. Well, he drove us from Georgia to Indiana and then she drove me from Indiana over to Missouri. So really stressful. Again, I'm on bed rest. I'm not supposed to be moving, but we're making this big move. So anyway, we get to Missouri and we find a maternal fetal medicine specialist, thankfully. It was very smooth. Thank God. It was really just very smooth. So we got settled with a maternal fetal medicine specialist, and then I was still at home on bed rest. We went into my appointment and I'm trying to think of the weeks, but we get to one of my first appointments, and it was one of the only times I got to put on clothes and go out the house. So I was really excited. We got to the appointment and the doctor said that I was having contractions. They did ultrasound, said that I was, my cervix was thinning and that I was having contractions. And so we were like, oh my gosh. Like, here we go again. But what he said was, so what we're going to do is we're going to put you in the hospital and we're going to see if we can stop contractions, but you're going to be in the hospital for the rest of your pregnancy. And I was like, okay, because I was into the second trimester, because I remember I spent 14 weeks in the hospital on bed rest with my son, Brandon. Boy, I could just spend all kind of time talking about that, but I'll just kind of get through the first part and we can kind of come back. But I got through 14 weeks in the hospital by a thread. I don't even know how to describe that whole situation, but it was very difficult emotionally. My husband, we moved back to Missouri because he was going back to grad school. So he was in grad school. He was taking a full load of classes. He was in a graduate assistantship. So he had like two jobs essentially. And then I'm in the hospital and then he has to, you know, make time to come check on me, take care of me, bring food and whatever other things that I might need that I wanted outside of what the hospital provided. So it was very, 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 very stressful time. But after 14 weeks in the hospital, we did make it the whole time. There was lots and lots of monitoring, daily shots of heparin. I mean, to prevent blood clots. I mean, it was quite a task, but we got through it and I eventually got to go home and we welcomed baby boy Brandon, who arrived safe, alive and well into the world on December 29th, and that was 2007. That's kind of that story. And then we found out when Brandon was a year old that we would be expecting again. So the really interesting thing about that was I knew that I was pregnant before I checked, before I went to the doctors, and I was so reluctant because I thought, oh my gosh, after the last pregnancy, I just am not sure how I'm going to manage this emotionally, you know, just stopping work again, the whole, like, just all of it. But God was faithful. And thankfully, I was, of course, the same thing. I had a cerclage. Both times I forgot to mention, I had an insufficient cervix. I like that better than incompetent cervix. But I had that with both pregnancies, and so I had a cerclage. So I stayed at home longer with my second living son, rainbow baby, Jalen. And so I was only in the hospital 4 weeks, with that pregnancy. And then he was born in 2009. So that's kind of my story of my losses and my births.
I would love for you to talk more about bed rest, because being on bed rest at home in the comfort of your own home is so different than being on bed rest at the hospital. So can you share just the differences with the two and then how you managed them in both of your rainbow baby pregnancies? Because obviously you had one longer and then one shorter.
Yes. Oh, boy. Wow. I think one of the things that just struck me is I just never expected that I would go to a doctor's appointment and not be able to go home for 14 weeks. Like that, I think, was really emotionally difficult. And, you know, initially I was trying to be really positive and, you know, I was so scared that we would lose another baby. But I said, okay, whatever we have to do. And the experience in the hospital was really interesting. It was a teaching hospital. And so there were, I guess, the interns and then there, you know, other medical providers coming in and out. But so there would be these sets of residents or interns who would come in. And I recall one of them saying when I first came in, so you probably should prepare yourself, you know, for the worst. And I thought, I want to have less contact with you. Like, you're not being helpful. And this is already a very stressful situation. And I knew, okay, you have to give people information so that they can make medical decisions. I understand that. But at that point, it was already so emotionally draining. I just felt like I need people who are positive. I ended up, you know, of course, because I was in the hospital so long, my lead physician, you know, he was a jewel, and he would essentially allow me to kind of say, you know, these are the people that I would like and I appreciate and they are positive and I don't mind them coming into my room. And these are the ones that I'm just like, I cannot do them. So can you please make sure they don't round with me? I mean, he did honor that. And that was Dr. Randall Floyd. He gave excellent care. But in the hospital, so I was in a room by myself. Thank the Lord for that. But I basically was in the bed. I lived beside a fetal monitor that was always there. So there was my bed and there was the fetal monitor. And then, of course, the bathroom. And I was able to take a shower seated. So I was thankful to be able to do that. I know some moms on bed rest are not able to do that. I could use a bathroom by myself. I was also grateful for that. But other than that, I was in a hospital bed. And, you know, I did have a window and I could look out the window, but I was on an upper floor, so I really couldn't see much. But yes, so it was me and the four walls and the TV, had a computer. You know, I was able to bring things in because essentially I lived there. I was a resident of the hospital. And at one point, it just got hard early. And this was early on. It was like, this isn't how pregnancy is supposed to be, at least how I imagined it. So I struggled a lot emotionally with that, of like my expectations of what pregnancy would be. And certainly what I was experiencing was not any of what I thought it would be. So I struggled with depression and anxiety. I had fetal monitoring daily. So, you know, some people, you know, with healthy pregnancies, you know, they'll have monitoring, you know, I don't even know what other pregnancies have in terms of monitoring, but I know it's not daily. So I'd have to get on the monitor for a certain period of time every day so they can monitor baby. I had to have the heparin shots, the shots that I have to take at my belly every day, and that's to help prevent blood clots. So it was rough emotionally. And again, you know, it's not like Greg, my husband, could be there to sit with me all day long because he was working and he was a graduate student. He would come, you know, every day, and our saving graces was Saturday football. I feel like that kind of helped save our marriage. It kind of, you know, helped keep us connected because it was very difficult. I felt alone a lot. I was by myself a lot, save the, you know, the nursing staff coming in and out through the day. I had every, you know, I had every meal there. I spent Thanksgiving in the hospital. That was rough, but thankfully my mom and my aunt came over. They bought enough Thanksgiving dinner for the other women on the floor, as well as the staff. So we got to share kind of Thanksgiving with others. And so that was nice. Of course, I couldn't see anybody because we couldn't go outside the room, but we got to share with other people. And that was really nice. But I wrote my memoir, Pregnant with Promise, kind of really out of, it was my outlet at that point. The book is really a compilation of my journaling throughout my pregnancy. So it's pretty much, you know, it might not be grammatically correct all the time, but it was pretty much my pure thoughts while I was on bed rest and scriptures that kind of helped me get through. And so that's essentially what the book is. And that journaling, prayer, reading my Bible, you know, family members popping in, calling, you know, Greg's support, that is what got me through that time. I am not sure otherwise how I would have made it. Again, literally 14 weeks in a bed. I couldn't even go outside. There were, I think, two or three occasions where I not had a lot of contractions, because I was still having contractions through, you know, most of that time. I was on different medications to kind of help stop that. And, you know, praise God, we were successful through that time period. But that was definitely a challenging kind of a challenging time for me. But again, the journaling, the family support, friends who were around definitely helped.
Then, you know, you really have turned your pain into purpose. And now you give back and really it's your business and ministry to really help women who are going through the mental health challenges through pregnancy and postpartum period. Love for you to share a little bit about just your healing journey and then now the work that you do.
One thing I think I forgot to kind of ask or to finish clarified earlier was being at home on bed rest. Of course, I could, you know, I had the ability to have things around me. I could be comfortable in the bed, but I was by myself a lot at home. And it was a little worrisome because if I, you know, was in pain or something was happening, I didn't have that. So at some point, I actually felt like being in the hospital was helpful in some ways because I felt like, okay, if something happens, I'm in the best place. But in terms of, you know, my healing journey, I am still on the journey, believe it or not. I am still there. I did not realize, you know, there are so many resources, including, you know, this podcast and, you know, different communities that I had no idea, believe it or not, when I was on bed rest. Like, I did not know of any of the resources that there are now. I knew the Bible, I had the Bible, I had magazines, and I did my journaling, and that kind of got me through that time period. And that was with one pregnancy. But again, you know, there was then the second pregnancy, which I was at home for most of the time, but I felt like I was just getting by. Like when your kids, you know, the kids were born, you know, it was like, okay, time to be a parent, time to do this, transitioning back to work, it's time to do that. I don't think I really took good stock, even as a psychologist, of my mental health and where I was. And so I know I still had anxiety. I didn't feel as much the depression. I felt like that part passed, but the anxiety was there, you know, and obviously I think that's something that I still kind of deal with. But one of the things that I didn't know and I became more familiar with as I would, at some point I didn't publish, my kids were born in 2007 and 2009. I didn't actually publish my book until 2015 because I needed to be away from it. It was so traumatic and so difficult that I just could not, I just needed space from it. So I it took me a while to feel like I could engage and do that. I got there, but it took a while. So, but when I did come back to the book and trying to get it ready to publish in paperback, and when I, you know, started thinking and wondering, like, was my experience that abnormal? And of course, I began to learn, like, absolutely not. And unfortunately, my experiences wasn't, you know, they were not that abnormal. And so I started, you know, just looking at, you know, well, what is, you know, how have other people made it through those situations and found communities like postpartum support and, you know, pregnancy after loss support and sisters in loss. And I was like, oh my gosh, like there's this whole community that I had no idea about and was just baffled, honestly, of like, oh my gosh, there's so much for women and birthing persons to the support that we need when we're going through these difficult times. And so actually reconnecting with my story, working on getting the book published really gave me this sense of wanting to then help other people. Like, for instance, I did not realize, and again, I'm a psychologist, so I knew about trauma, but I didn't really like get birth trauma. And as I started reading about it, I was like, oh my gosh, like, absolutely, that was my experience. Well, yes, in lots of ways. And so I really just became more interested in pursuing and reading. I mean, you know, listening to different podcasts, doing different readings, and getting connected with Postpartum Support International, I realized that they had a certification for psychologists for this whole field of perinatal mental health, maternal mental health. And I thought, oh my gosh, that totally sounds like me. Like, I think that's, you know, part of, you know, me going through this experience and how I can bring more purpose beyond writing the memoir and sharing my story that way, but really using my skills as a psychologist to help women dealing with perinatal mental health, depression, anxiety, and the whole spectrum of the mental health issues that women can have in pregnancy and postpartum. And so that was really exciting to see, like, oh my gosh, there's this whole field of study. There's this whole area of practice really designed and would have been such a blessing during my experiences. But I am grateful to have made it through my experience even without those resources, and certainly really want to pay it forward and give back at this point.
Yes, I love that. And I love Postpartum Support International. It's a great organization. And they do so much for maternal mental health, and specifically Black maternal mental health. They're doing a lot of focus around what they can do to help Black people, you know, Indigenous people, women of color, when it comes to determining prenatal depression as well as postpartum depression and any other anxieties that we have as women of color. So I'm happy that they're focusing on that because it's so needed. Even more so now during this COVID-19 pandemic, which is traumatizing for us all. So I would love for you to share, obviously, for me, COVID-19 birth, something I have been sitting on for a year, and that is actually doing training around becoming birth and bereavement doulas. And you took the course. So I would love for you to just share, you know, your decision to become a doula, how you're going to incorporate that into your practice as a therapist. And then, you know, what did you learn from the course?
Oh, wow. Yes. So initially, I kept wondering, like, should I do that? Is that going to be something, you know, that I can do or that I should do? Because I really didn't know much. I had heard Jessica Roach speak. She is here local with the group Root, Storing Our Own Through Transformation. And I heard her speak on another podcast, and she talked about being a doula and what doulas do. And it just was mind blowing. I said, oh my goodness, like just learning the history and just hearing her talk was just amazing. And so I knew a little bit from it, but then I was like, is that really what I should do? But I loved that the course with Sisters in Loss included birth and bereavement, because having a history of loss myself and then also wanting to support other women who've had high-risk pregnancies or pregnancy loss, I was really drawn to the course for that reason. And it definitely did not disappoint in terms of the core curriculum, because it actually focused a lot on that. So just learning the core concepts of birth, and, you know, you assume, okay, well, if you've had a baby, or, you know, you may know and understand how your body works and how all of that happens. But the whole recap was, you know, phenomenal. But all of the curriculum that focused on, you know, how to support birth, and I think you used the term birth at any trimester, like that really clicked for me, because it was like, oh, you know, being a doula and using your the tools and being a support and an advocate from that standpoint is so empowering and powerful for individuals who may be having pregnancies and giving birth during their first trimester or during their second trimester or even the third trimester where they know that there may be a loss associated with that birth. And to me, I was like, oh my gosh, that makes total sense. I'm like, yes, I think I can do that. And I would love to be able to offer that support. So I did, you know, throughout the course, continue to think about, you know, how I wanted to do that and really thought about being able to offer services either to individuals who are pregnant and who are learning and getting news that there may be complications with their pregnancy and who decide they may want to hire a birth doula or even a bereavement doula because they know that there may be some challenges or there may be a loss that is pending. And so that is one of the ways that I have thought about using it. And then also even in hospital settings and, you know, where, you know, you can be, you know, either on call or there for a certain period of time on a certain day and being able to be a resource to families who are experiencing loss. Those are some of the ways that I thought about incorporating it, even as a psychologist, kind of having that as a separate kind of niche or tool to support birthers. So that was so exciting. Loved the course, loved it. You should take it if you haven't. It was wonderful. And then I also did the postpartum doula course as well, because I thought that is really helpful. Wanted to get more information about breastfeeding and supporting, you know, parents who are feeding any kind of way, however they choose to do that, but just really learning about that adjustment afterwards. There's a lot of talk about the fourth trimester and some people even talk about a fifth trimester. And I do really believe, especially from a mental health perspective, that support is essential because I recall from my pregnancies, especially the one where I was in the hospital for 14 weeks, it was almost like, okay, we did it. We got them here. Have a good time. Hope you're okay. And I was like, what? Because, you know, here I was dealing with anxiety and depression. And it was like, okay, we did it. Good job. And yeah, I was excited that we, quote unquote, we did it. And, you know, Brandon arrived here safely. But then it was like, I may still not be okay. Like, I may still need some support. And, you know, thankfully our family was around and, you know, it was in, you know, I had the support that I needed, but, I don't know that everyone has that. And even with family around, maybe there's more that you need, you know, after giving birth. And so certainly want to be looking at, ways to support that.
So, I would love for you to share any other tools or resources or books that you recommend those who go through any kind of loss and are looking to find some healing or some success stories.
Yes. Well, first, of course, my own memoir, Pregnant with Promise. It's available on Amazon, but that I think is one again. It's a memoir, so it's going to kind of look a lot into my personal experience, but also different scriptures. Also, a couple of other books. One, Supernatural Childbirth. That book was really, I read that actually, one of our cousins gave me that book while I was in the hospital. And it was a phenomenal read. There are a couple of other books that I'm just starting to read, but feel like they have really just been on point. One is Expecting with Hope, and that is by, I think, Teska Drake. And then Healing Your Grieving Heart After Stillbirth, and that's by Alan Wolfelt. And then another one that I'm, again, just starting to read through, but already has just been a blessing to me is From Three Heartbeats to One by Keisha Wells. So those are a couple of the books that I've either read or I'm currently reading that I think really, even from a spiritual standpoint, at least two of them coming from that standpoint of healing that I found helpful. And then in terms of podcasts, of course, Sisters in Law's outstanding podcast has really been, like, I listen to it a lot. Sometimes I have to take a pause because it can be really heavy, but you just hear on the other side, like, how people have come through, and it's so inspiring. So I always, you know, reference that. And then I also like a couple of other podcasts, Mom and Mind, the Homecoming podcast, and Evidence-Based Birth. So those are some of the resources that I like to share.
Yes, I love Keisha. Keisha was also on the podcast. You all can go back and listen to her episode. She's on episode 65. I love her and all the work that she's doing as well around maternal mental health. And then all the other sister podcasts, you shout out all my favorites too.
Yeah.
And I've had the pleasure of meeting all of them, all of the hosts in person too. Yeah, at different conferences and stuff. So Mom and Mind with Dr. Kat and Homecoming.
Yes.
Yeah, I love all them. So those are all excellent sources. But I definitely will link the other books that you mentioned, which are all good. I've heard of those books. I haven't read them myself, so I definitely may add those to my list as something to read as well on those other two books that you listed. So I'll make sure I link them for you all who are listening. You can go back and click on the links in the show notes or the description box. Dree, I would love for you to just leave our listeners with some encouraging words, because obviously I feel like we all are going through a sense of trauma right now, especially as we go into the holiday season and may not have the opportunity of spending the holidays like we normally do with family, with friends, being around a bunch of people, just because, you know, our elders may be afraid of just the consequences of having family around and getting this virus. So to all of our family and friends who may be just dealing with just the anxiety of what the holidays look like already because of loss and grief, and now add the trauma of coronavirus on top of it, what encouraging words can you leave our listeners as we go through this holiday season?
Yes, it is indeed a time that we need some encouragement. And so one of the things that I would say is, if you have connected to your village, make sure you stay connected to your village. I think when we get overwhelmed, there can be a sense of, I just need to, you know, pause, and we may withdraw from the people who love and can support us, because, and sometimes that's a good thing to withdraw, but if you withdraw and you withdraw a little too far, then it's harder for you to access kind of the things that replenish you and give you life. And so you really do want to, if you already have your village in place, to make sure that you make an intentional effort to stay connected during the season. And that is connected via telephone, via text, FaceTime, however you can, and however it's safe for you and your family members and loved ones to do that, because isolation is difficult and it really can exacerbate anxiety and mood symptoms. Other thing is, for those who still don't have your village, really, you know, trying to make an effort to build. And even I always encourage people, just start with one. Just find one person. You don't have to have a whole entourage, a whole group. Sometimes if you have one and you can start with this one person who you feel like, if I'm kind of in the throes of things, that's kind of quote unquote my person. I can, you know, reach out to that person. And then again, not just have that person available, but to really make an effort to say, I'm going to connect with that person, and even have the accountability. If that's your person, they should know. So let them know, hey, like, this is a rough time. I'd like to be able to reach out to you. Sometimes I'm not good at doing that. Can you help me with that? So then it's not just you're the person, especially if you may have a hard time reaching out, who's responsible for doing the extending, but that other person then can also partner with you. And so, you know, and be willing and open to accept the love and support that is extended to you in this season. Of course, using all your spiritual resources and all of the, every resource that you have available to you, not forgetting about those as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Darina, for being on the podcast. Where can our listeners connect with you after this episode?
I am on Instagram at Darina, DoreinaM Alfred. And the website is worksoffaith.net.
Thanks so much, Darina, for sharing your story and your light. It's been a blessing, and I'm so happy that I got to hear your story in whole. You know, it's different connecting on the other side, so I'm so happy that you were able to share.
Yes, thank you, and thank you for having me. It was awesome. I appreciate you and all the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. There are so many ways to connect with the Sisters in Lost community. Join our monthly support group, our Sisters in Lost Healing Collective at sistersinlosthealing.com. Join our free Facebook group at sistersinlost.com/community or text Sisters to 797979 to download your free Journal to Healing ebook. That is Sisters to 797979 to download your free Journal to Healing ebook. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Sisters in Lost and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Yeah, girl, we on YouTube at Sisters in Lost TV. We love you for listening. Keep the faith. Until next time, this is Erica, and I'll talk to you soon.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.